Welcome to Kidlit Happy Hour. Grab a drink, cozy up,
and explore storytelling with creative minds inside children's publishing and beyond.
What are you eating?
I'm eating a scone that I got in Portland.
Oh,
wobbling all over.
That's amazing. I love that you brought a scone home.
It's because I have eyes that are bigger than my stomach. And when I'm traveling, I'm like, well, it's my only chance to try any of the food here. I don't order at all.
It's such a scarcity mindset. You're like, I must find every amazing pastry in the Metroplex of Portland. That's my responsibility.
I have a pastry. I'm always like, I'm going to eat healthy, but I want all the pastries.
That was me yesterday when I ordered that whole sandwich. And then I ate the sandwich and then I wished it was back. So then I ordered another sandwich and I ate it again. They brought it to my table and to go back. And I was like, oh no. This is for me right now.
You definitely do that at boba stores.
Oh yeah. You do that. So I also just have to say, I love that we have to pretend like we haven't just been talking for half an hour before. Joanna, how are you?
Okay, but for folks listening, this whole process, as you know, is one of growth and experimentation. We're taking a very design thinking mindset to pretty much our whole lives. So happy to fail and try and learn and fail again. Since our format is around these guiding questions, we wanted to capture a recap of our own reflections to hopefully inspire your reflections around the question of what is story. I think so what we'll do is we'll start with some insights or ahas that we gained around the question of what is story, possibly some ways that that has impacted us, and then maybe some reflections just as we go on how the podcast is going or feeling or things we're learning as we do it.
So I think that sounds like an A-OK plan, Joe.
Okay, so you go first. Some ahas or insights.
I also realized we just like jumped into business. Like,
again, it's because we talked for half an hour.
I know. We just really quick though, how are you? You look absolutely stunning. You just came back from Portland. How are you?
I'm good. Okay, thank you for pausing me. I'm doing really good. I'm tired. I was in Hawaii and then I was in Portland for one night. And then last night I got to go see Min Lay's part of his launch tour for me. And I just love being around kidlit people. It's super interesting. And no knock if there's any adult authors who listen to this podcast, which I would be surprised at, but you know, welcome to everyone. But Portland was the Pacific Northwest Booksellers Conference. And we did this speed dating thing where authors have to rotate to different tables and talk like 8 minutes. But before that, we got to have dinner with just the authors. And I realized it was mostly adult authors. And I felt such a little kid at the big kid table, you know? And they're all very nice. And they're also very intimidating.
Yeah.
And something that Raina said last night at Min's book event, they were in conversation. Raina.
We're on a first name basis with Raina.
Raina Telgemeier. Sorry, my bad. Who I just met for the first time, by the way. She just said this beautiful thing. And then everyone was making fun of me because I was totally taking notes on their conversation on my phone. But what she said is she sees wisdom and silliness as being two key pieces of being a children's book author, which I just loved. And then Min followed up by saying, in our space, kidlit space, I see a lot of people who take their craft very seriously, but don't take themselves too seriously. I had to take notes. They were brilliant. And I feel like that's really true. And it really actually made me reflect when I was in the adult space. Again, everyone was really nice. And I'm sure if I got to know them better, there's silliness there too. But the kidlit space, it just feels more comfortable immediately. People are so goofy and they're so friendly and they're so warm and welcoming. And they're also geniuses. Like they're razor sharp in their like analysis of the world and what needs to happen, but also beautiful at finding the beauty and the hope and the laughter.
Yes. So,
this is really just my ode to kidlit because
I love that. There's like such an inherent hopefulness if you're writing for kids, if you're trying to speak truth and honesty, hope into these little humans that we all love. We have to connect with them where they are, which is the utmost wonder and goofballiness possible. Yeah. I love that tension of taking your craft seriously, but not yourself. Ooh.
It's really true. So, okay, but how are you?
Good. It totally resonates. The wonderful Ellen O, who I have admired from afar. Thanks to you, you connected me with her. She lives out here and she put together a dinner of kidlit folks this week. And so it was the first time since moving here that I've been in a group space with so many other writers for kids. And we had the yummiest dinner. And it was just so lovely. Huddling around a table, everyone sharing where they're at with their projects and just laughing at themselves and, you know, everyone commiserating over the brutality of writing a first draft or just jumping in with supports and how many people were offering to help and collaborate. Like, oof, I just felt so good. And that's like my dream setting. And I'm just grateful for it. So thank you, Ellen, for coordinating.
Oh, I love that so much. I was just like having major FOMO, like, I wish I was there. That sounds really fun.
Oh, it felt really good. I wish you were there too.
Oh, and the other thing I forgot to say is what? I think on the day this thing releases, my book also releases. I'm there. Hooray, everyone.
Do you believe like your book will actually be available on shelves?
You know, it's wild. So please hurry and go look for it if you haven't ordered it or checked it out or seen it. It's called
Say My Name. Yeah.
My name, and it is illustrated by Kwale, and her art is amazing, and it should be available anywhere. So would appreciate an order, a recommendation, a review, or check it out from the library. Say something about it online. I would be very grateful.
It's absolutely gorgeous. You want to touch it with your hands and give it to children and read it yourself. It's stunning. Yay, it's in the world.
Ugh. All right.
Okay, so what is story? Is this what we expected to come out of this? You know, the idea was always to interview folks that are in the kidlit space, whether author, illustrator, publisher, whatever it may be, and then someone outside of it to kind of get at this bigger question and hopefully dig up some insights.
Well, what are some of the things that stuck out for you?
You know, for me, I feel like in every single conversation, this idea of emotional resonance was just like front of mind. Everyone in their own way was coming at this question of story by trying to dig and dig and dig closer to truth, to emotional resonance. Like, how do we get our reader to feel this thing that is so important to us to communicate? And everyone had different ways of doing it and thinking about it. But like, that was the heartbeat, was one of my takeaways. Did you get that?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's been really resonant for me. And I think really impactful. So the whole time we've been interviewing folks, I've just been sitting with this feeling as people are talking, I'm making connections to my own writing. And I've been working, I think I've said, on this middle grade that is just like not happening right now. The whole time I was listening, I was like, I haven't gotten to the emotional heart yet. Like,
yeah,
I haven't figured it out. It's not there. I'm like tap dancing around it. And I haven't figured out what the emotional piece is. And like, fudge, that means I need to really go back and think. So that's been really huge. At somewhere in the last few weeks, I sent off a draft to my agent who gave me great feedback, but is also just like, still needs a lot of work, you know? Right. Like, yep, okay.
And this idea too, of like when we get so deep into the drafting or the revision or whatever it is, just having a simple reminder to pull up and be like, wait, what's the point? Like, what are we getting after? Mm-hmm. And hearing that from them just yanks me back into reality of the why, which I think in all the hustle and bustle can get lost, unfortunately.
I think something that stood out to me from this is just, I've also been thinking about wonder.
Yes.
From Donna's episode. And just how am I cultivating that for myself? Yes. How am I allowing myself to do that? And how am I appreciating my children when they do that and giving them something to wonder? So this is less as a writer, but as a mom, if I'm so worried back-to-back-to-back scheduling, which I'm really conscious of trying not to do, am I giving them space to just wonder and explore their imagination?
Yes.
And I think a lot about how that is actually such a mark of liberation and freedom.
Yes.
That's ultimately the goal of why we are trying to dismantle oppressive systems. And so how can we create our own world of wonder within these systems so that we're not constantly just feeling angry and afraid and traumatized? Anyways, that's not very cohesive, but that's for sure where my brain's been.
It's interesting as I'm watching you say that, when you talk about wonder, your hands get really big and wide. And then when you're talking about like oppressive systems, you get really tight. And so I do think it's a visual reminder of what we're doing with storytelling. What is story? It's a way to crack open imagination, to build a new imagination that we can ultimately operate in and live in. Wonder, Donna. Woof.
No,
that was one where we really were like, how many times did that word show up?
8 billion times.
I thought too, another concept that showed up when we were talking to Michelle about reporting and about being really direct and not overloading with facts, but letting people feel a person or a story. And then it made me think about Dan and his strong conviction that some storytelling can be too didactic and that we're focusing too much on telling and not enough showing. And so I think that came up too, like the best kinds of stories are the ones that you can show relevance, that you can feel truth through characters and real scenes and stories, and not through just explaining to your reader what you want them to feel.
I love that idea. I think what sits with me from Michelle's episode is just that idea of, well, why is it relevant? Why is this something we need to report on? And the tension of, like, often we don't know. And that's our job as storytellers. We're not as beholden to 20 seconds of, you know, film or whatever. Yeah. But we have a lot more freedom in writing stories that help people see what things matter, what things are relevant, you know? Yeah. Just as Michelle does, to bring to light stories people don't realize are relevant to them and making them relevant. So I think that there's power in that that is really beautiful and sometimes scary.
Yes. If we think about ourselves as storytellers, we're choosing of all the possible themes, ideas, characters in the world, we're choosing what we choose for a reason. We're elevating that. We're platforming that issue or that moment, that, you know, tiny little seed of a story. Yeah. And so taking that seriously and honoring what that means to us and why does this feel relevant and what am I trying to say? I feel like that's a responsibility and a beautiful opportunity too. So I liked framing it that way.
I actually just read The Ogress and the Orphan.
Yes.
It was so good by Kelly Barnhill. And I think that a story is one really beautiful example of storytelling, making some very incisive, very clear connections to what's happening in our political, social sphere in the U.S. But it's done so brilliantly through story. Yes. But if you know the context, you can't miss it. You know, I was thinking about that when I was reading it.
Yeah, gosh, I consult for an organization. And one piece of the job is reading a lot of books in progress and stories in progress. And it makes me think back to the didacticism piece. It's like there is this real interplay between having something that you know and feel is relevant that you want to put on the page and doing it in a way that actually resonates, like finding the emotional resonance. Because if there's a miss there, and I feel like especially in the middle grade space, and actually across the board, as a reader, if you feel talked down to or you feel like something's being shoved down your throat, I just check out real fast. I think Donna talked so beautifully about how wondering allows you to get to those moments. When you think about what is story and pulling up to that question, I don't think yelling into the void about something you're passionate about is story.
It's made me wonder a lot, actually, because I always start from a really didactic place.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah.
Like there's something I want to say about the world and the story I can tell around it. And like, Say My Name is a good example. I can be very didactic. You know, it's like, say my name, pretty clear. Like, anything less is not me.
Right.
Making me wonder how I can grow as a storyteller.
I just can't not push back on you there. Undoubtedly, your books, every single one is anchored in social justice in some way, right? There's little you're going to do in your life that doesn't come back to that, which is why I love you so much. And every single case across the board in every single book, it comes down to a story of a person. Each in Say My Name, it covers six different people with stories and families and traditions and languages. And that's, we're getting this big idea through these characters. And to me, that's what we're talking about. Like that's the texture. Those are the layers and beautiful illustration that does that too. So yes, I think like that's the question we need to always be asking. What are the books that kids are going to reach for? And the ones they're going to reach for are the ones that speak to them. The ones that speak to them are the ones that feel true and emotionally resonant and not like a hammer over the head. But that's why I think yours are magic.
We'll see. I just love this process. So I guess I'm lifting us to
how
this felt as doing a podcast in general, ahas, questions, insights, like, you know, how has it felt? We've had four episodes. Wait, are this four now? Yeah.
No, well, we had that intro and then three conversations. So this is our fifth?
Yeah, it's our fifth one.
Man, on the best of days, I feel like so proud that we did something. That we had something that we were really hopeful about, that we felt this positive energy around, and that we, you know, it's hard to be like, I'm going to do this thing and it's worth doing and others might care. I feel like that's a vulnerable place to be in. And so I'm proud of us for stepping into that. I mean, on trickier days, I think there's definitely a voice that's like, there are so many podcasts in the world. And I just really hope this feels meaningful to people. And unlike getting to read at a kids assembly or unlike getting to be at a bookstore, there's just no interfacing for the most part with people who are listening. So that part's tricky. There's definitely like a wish and a longing for more of that connection and feedback and community. So I'm somewhere in that space any given day. What about you?
I think I'm really similar. Like, I can't believe we did it and it's happening. It's literally, we're like, look, people are listening. We're like, maybe 100 people will listen. You know, and it definitely has surpassed that in the first episode even. And we were like, oh my gosh. I feel like we've been very clear. This was also a selfish endeavor. And I so grateful for every interview. I really do get so many insights and everyone's amazing. So That I love that. One of our takeaways.
Okay.
That we love hearing from you. And so we love getting feedback. We love knowing what you've loved and what's working and what you enjoy listening to, and also things that you wish we would talk about or things that you wish we could do differently. So we would love to hear from you, whether it is on Patreon or in our DMs. We literally screenshot anytime we get a comment about the podcast, we screenshot it and send it immediately to
the other. It is so fun, from texts to tweets to an Instagram DMs and a couple comments and here and there. And each one is like, oh, it's like food for the soul. Every time someone says like, oh, that stuck with me, or this has been rattling in my head. It's such a dream. It feels like when you hear a kid say, I mean, it's not, of course, not the same, but when a kid loves your book and you see them hold it, or it means something, and not even loves your book, like laughs at a page. Like that's real, right? That's connection.
So please keep those coming.
Yes, keep those coming. They're the best. The best.
What I'm realizing too is this podcast is less like us than it is the brilliant people we get to talk to.
Of course.
It just feels like if anyone, people have nice things to say, it's like, well, yeah, duh. Listen to who we talk to.
True. One question I think about in terms of how we're interviewing people is because we've come up with a structure, you know, like these guiding questions. And so one thing that's been really fun to learn and grow is how much we're trying in real time. Like, how much are we going to force these people to talk about the question we brought them on to talk about? And I've loved the surrender of just letting people speak whatever truth is coming up for them. So we start with what is story, and we end up so far away from that initial question. And I think I'm realizing that's okay. Whereas I initially started like, no, we're not going to get to this like perfect thesis and have a bow wrapped around the whole thing. Just realizing it's a launching off point. Again, as if we were at a happy hour, whatever energy shows up that day, whatever is cultivated in the space is the way we're going to go. And I think I want to be a little bit more go with the flow and not like, and so bring us back to what you said 28 minutes ago when I asked, you know, like that's something I want to improve on.
The flip of that is because at this point we've interviewed almost everyone for the first season, just so listeners know, like most of the interviews are done. But when we've interviewed folks who are not specifically in the kidlit space, what I think has been helpful for me is making those explicit connections between what they're saying and drawing insights directly into me for children. In the moment, I don't know if that's helpful for listeners because it's happening for me in my head. Like when Michelle was talking about relevance, I'm thinking about, oh, what's our responsibility as storytellers to write that's relevant that other people don't know is relevant, that kind of thing. Making those more explicit, like letting it flow and also trying to connect at the same time.
That's a great call. It's the whole ride. I've loved it. I have loved it. You hear a lot with people writing for adults, writing for kids, whatever it may be, that writing is you and a page and a pen or and a keyboard. And so being able to just break out of that rhythm and be able to connect and talk and breathe together, I feel like I up-level in any of the conversations. Something sticks with me, something resonates, and it shows up, whether not on a page, somewhere in my life. So I feel that part's felt so good. One other thing that in no way surprises me, but is so true across the board, is how these incredibly creative minds that we get to talk to, how much self-awareness goes into the work that they do. Like there's so much, everything from sitting and asking honest questions of themselves to literal therapy, to that internal work, which kind of goes with wondering, like it's all part of the work. That's all part of being a writer or being in this space. And that feels to me so liberating to hear other people talk about, like what permission to just live fully. And in that living fully, we become more of what we hope to be on the page.
Love that. I have more to add, but I don't want to give away things that other people have shared. That's that work. True. I just can't wait till people hear all the other amazing people who are coming.
I know. There's so much to come, and it all's so different. I think I'll be curious to hear by the end of this thing, you know, at least this season, hearing from people like, oh, this sort of thing, doesn't it? Or this is less exciting.
Yeah, I love that. Okay, now can I close?
Joe, please.
Like Caroline, it's happy hour. What's real share?
Do we not? I'm not ready. Are you going to go first?
I'll go first. Last time I shared about my book launch. So I'll share about my other book launch, my most recent one for one day. I have so many book launch stories. For one day, it was on a day of a humongous windstorm. So for those of you who don't know, California has had some wacky weather, climate change, and there's been massive flooding and then huge windstorms that were knocking down trees and shutting off power. And so on this day, there was no power in any of the surrounding cities. On the way there, there was a fallen tree and the whole road was blocked. And I was on an on-ramp onto this larger road. We had to all reverse backwards off the
on-ramp. I remember this.
At a time. Yeah. And then drive into oncoming traffic. So that was step one. And then we got to the store, and the store, people are like texting me like, is the launch happening? Like, there's no power. And so we did the launch with no power. I had all these slides and everything prepared. And I was just like, well, I'm just going to talk at you for 5 minutes and I'll read the book because we have no power. There's no lights. The cash registers don't work. And thank goodness I had partnered with this incredible baker, and she made this cake. It was like a 3-tiered beautiful cake decorated like the book one day. And so it was just like, okay, we're going to sing happy birthday to the cake or to the book. Yay. Now everyone eat cake. And that's the book launch. And so the way that they sold books is they just took down everyone who wanted a book's phone number.
Like on pen and paper.
And they just called people for the next week to get their credit card information. Oh, and that was my most recent book launch.
Oh, so what's next?
I don't know. So next is a baby. That's my prediction.
If I go into labor at your book launch, I'm never going to a book launch again of yours. I'm not up for it. I'm not up for it.
You'll be the highlight. Okay, Caroline, that was my overshare. What's yours? Get down to business.
Okay, so this came up recently because I was listening to someone talk about how complicated it can feel when people are criticizing your work, and then that blends into criticizing you online publicly. Yes. And it gave me this flash memory from a few years ago, which I am sure you will remember.
I sure do. I still harbor deep anger and resentment. Yes, I don't even know.
I don't even know this person. And it's not worth getting into the weeds because I can't even remember it because I think I blacked it out. But all I remember was I posted something on my Instagram about book bannings. It was like 2 years ago was when Mouse was getting banned and these books were being pulled from shelves in Texas, where I'm from. Anyway, I posted something about it. I went to sleep. And I remember waking up, and Mouse, for context, is a graphic novel that tells the story of the Holocaust. It's a Jewish book that is getting pulled from shelves. And I wake up in the morning and there's like this virulent fight going on in the comment section that has now gone from talking about book banning to talking about Israel-Palestine. It is completely derailed, as many posts that have anything to do with any Jewish topic does. And I commented, like, this is not what the topic of the conversation is. Please refocus the conversation. And it didn't stop. And I ended up shutting out the comments or blocking or something. And what happened after that was this spiral of this person that was involved in the discussion jumping into posts across the interwebs saying Caroline Cusin Pritchard is a silencer and an anti-Semite, and going off about me. And not just that, going on to like Goodreads and Amazon and posting about Gidi and Kvetch. And I think you're right.
We left a very positive review about Gidi and Kvetch and then went on. And I don't know if she deleted that one and posted a new one.
Yes! She wrote this long comment on Amazon like, I used to love Gidi and Kvetch and buy it for all of my friends.
Yes.
Now I realize that every page is covered with anti-Semitism.
You just talk a little bit for people who don't know. What is Gidi and Kvetch about?
Oh, gosh. Oh, yeah. So that was it's still my only book that's out and published. All the others are in the pipeline. It's a friendship story between a little girl and her bird friend, and has tons of Yiddish interwoven throughout, but it's about them. You know, they're an odd couple pair and taking care of each other.
Okay, hold on. But Gidi is like the most positive person. She's like a Caroline, basically. And then Kvetch is the grumpy Kvetch. And so it's just like a super cute, positive book, and they use Yiddish. And
just certainly the idea is to bring in Jewish themes and ideas and center Yiddish and center these Jewish kids. And honestly, I'm not even proud of it, but I remember my first thought being like, I need to find this person and explain. I need them to understand. I was just trying to keep the focus on book banning. Everything in me wanted to defend what I did.
I was mad. I remember being like, I'm going to get on there. I'm going to say something about her.
I almost wish I was mad. I feel some level of shame thinking about my initial reaction. Like, I was shaking. I remember going about my day shaking. Yeah, like, I was anxious about what that person thought, this stranger. I was anxious about, well, what did this mean about me? It just went from zero to this outrageous heightened insecurity. I just remember that being a real turning point for me in terms of how I think about this work, how I think about storytelling and sharing and being involved in conversations that are both directly related and tangential to publishing at large, and wanting to be a part of these hard conversations, and also trying to figure out, like, where do you set boundaries and how? Adding in the layer that I'm a white woman, so I want to be in these conversations. I don't want to shut them down. I don't want to shut off things when they get hard. I want to be in there talking to other white people. So anyway, all these things were going on.
Okay, hold on, rewind. Did that person come back and start being positive again.
Like, you know, I do think it was like then Yom Kippur hit, which is our most sacred Jewish day. It's a day of atonement. And I remember the review on Amazon disappeared. It went away.
It's just wild to me that this person who, that anybody, but it happens all the time, which we will find out very shortly in our next few episodes too.
Yeah.
But this idea of going after you and going on anyone who ever even posted about you, it wasn't like something you posted. People who posted positive things about your book, she went on there to say all these super untruthful things. And this is just, this is like truly how people's lives get ruined.
Yeah. I remember I was about to do a reading for a Jewish book festival. And I remember thinking, what if they go look at these comments? I was getting caught up in so much that was out of my control and also untrue that I knew was untrue.
Yeah. Like eats at you.
It does.
I mean, somebody thinks so violently.
Yeah.
So
I have so much, I can smile and laugh about it now, right? It's like there are years between this and that and knowing how silly and no, it's not even silly. Like it's just thinking about how I don't want to dismiss that my feelings at the time. It's not like, oh, silly Caroline. That was a really shocking thing to feel like people were kind of going through every channel to get after me as best they could. But I just look back on that and like, oh, this, it just becomes really clear. This work can't possibly be about the pleasing of strangers online.
Yeah.
The work has to be so grounded in what I believe to be true in the readers and kids. All to say, the conversations we're having, the reminders of what we're grounded in, being in real community, being with humans and people that you love and trust and learn from, like that's it. It's the whole thing. And so, and that helps give me my breath back and my humor back.
Yours are so good. Your Richard.
What? No, I mean, I don't have a conclusion.
Storyteller. Well, thank you all so much for being here. We would love to hear your feedback. So please join our Patreon. Leave us some comments.
That's a super smooth. Okay, we really want to connect with you. Please join our Patreon.
So that we can keep doing this.
But really, the Patreon is truly, first of all, for those that have joined, thank you so much. It makes such a difference. We're almost at the point where it's like scratching the surface of covering the monthly cost of these platforms. We have to download, you know, record the conversations and edit them and then upload them to the site. So thank you, thank you, thank you for everyone who's there. And honestly, the free thing that would be so awesome is if you could follow it on Spotify or Apple and maybe give a rating. That would be huge.
Preferably 5 stars. And if you want to leave a nice comment under there too, we do read them all. There's like 4 of them right now.
Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time. Oh, wait. And the next guiding question, Joe, should we announce?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Our next guiding question is, what does it mean to write truthfully?
Ooh, it's a real doozy, folks. There is so much emotion packed into that one with the folks that have come on. They are amazing. Remarkable humans.
Okay, on that note, toodles!
Bye!